This is X-Formation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. I'm Will, and today I'm joined, as always, by my colleague, Caden.
How's it going?
It's going well. Hey, I have a question for you. Do you think that we even have any listeners to this podcast? How many people do you think are listening to this podcast right now?
Okay, so I can confirm that we have one person, my mother. She is always listening. She informed me that I was wrong. Trent, Texas does have gigabyte fiber. I was wrong about that. Yeah, she let me know. And I told her I was just I was just egging you on, but deep down I knew that I was wrong. So, hi, Mom. You know, right? We've got one listener for sure.
I know. I'm pretty sure my mom would probably listen to this as well if I sent it.
Have you told your parents about it yet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I try to send them and keep them updated with what I have going on, but mean, they're doing their own. My dad still works like almost full time in his garden, right? He's like this little, you know, he has this little like garden fiefdom. And
this sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I'm an avid gardener, right? Yeah. I love gardening and strawberry gardening.
Strawberry
garden. Very specific.
Yes, exactly.
I love gardening. So just to see, just to hear that your dad is working and it's gardening, that just makes me happy deep down inside that there is a job for gardeners that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like volunteer, right? Like he helps with the extension office because the extension office does outreach. So he helps people when they need gardening advice and all that kind of good stuff. Yeah. So like they've got their own things going on, but when they can catch it, they
keep them up to date. So I guess this is our episode where we say, hello world. If you're out there,
send us a note. If you want to hear something, send us an email. will@thecgo.org. But today let's talk about digital equity and,
I almost forgot what the topic was, but digital equity is, it's a hot button issue for tech policy nerds like us. And I'd like to ask you the most vague question I possibly can, which is, what is digital equity?
Yeah. What is digital equity? So, So just stepping back a bit, I mean, so we're seeing this, obviously this issue is part of the Biden administration pretty clearly, right? Is the issue of equity and trying to change. And, I mean, the idea with equity is it's pretty fundamental at a kind of a core level, right?
Right.
So we know that basically, it's a longstanding tradition in the United States and a lot of other liberal democracies that strives to allocate resources and opportunities to those in need. And really it's for a purpose, which is to reach an equal outcome, right? It's to help individuals to reach an equal outcome. So part of this idea is that in a world that is increasingly dominated by digital issues and digital services, having internet service and a computer are part of the, of digital equity. But I think it's far more broad than just having service access and having a computer and all that. It's the ability to use these services. I don't know how to say it. It's like,
well, you wrote a whole paper on it, right? You're about to release part two, which is entitled The Digital Divide, Digital Equity, and the Nature of the Problem.
Yeah.
And it's part two of this whole series on broadband legislation. It's just been well received, probably more well received than the podcast so far has been. But you sort of lay out these two elements to digital equity, to access, which is
so you have the access to the technology and the ability to use the technology, right? But I guess what I'm trying to say
is the second part is the problem, the ability to use it sometimes.
Because that's the reason I'm so like wishy-washy on this, right? And the reason I think this is it's a fascinating and open topic when we talk about digital equity. But I guess what I'm trying to say is that with this second element, the ability to use technology in a transformative manner, that to me is the most difficult part of this conversation, because we really don't know what that looks like for each individual, right? It's highly contextual what to use this technology transformatively or to use it to help your own, to help yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Those things look very, very different for each individual. And to me, it's just hard to talk about it without talking about very specific sorts of concerns, right?
For example, there's the school teacher Charles Scott, and I listened to his podcast on digital equity.
Right.
He's from rural Arkansas, and he's really digging into digital equity in terms of how kids are using the internet to learn. And one of his big takeaways that sort of took me aback was that, a fifth grader hasn't been taught how to use a Chromebook yet. So just sending them a Chromebook isn't necessarily going to solve the problem. He had on his 12-year-old nephew, and his nephew was like, hey, it could have been just done on paper and we could have just scanned it instead of using this Chromebook and making it all complicated. What were you guys doing? And he kind of laughed at it and thought, oh, wow, someone is paying attention to us and how we're dealing with this. But I think it really got to the more fundamental question of just how school kids are using technology to learn, or if they're able to use it. He was talking about kids with disabilities who have a hard time learning from home. Mm-hmm. It was a huge issue, and I didn't realize the actual impact until I listened to him talk about it from a rural Arkansas perspective.
Yes. And that's in rural Arkansas, right?
But I that's mean, just rural Arkansas. That's right. That's one instance of transformative use of this technology that you're getting at.
Yes. Well, it could be, right? It could be this transformative use of technology in the case of students. I mean, students, I think, to me, are the, and especially what happened during COVID, that to me is a very difficult question as well, because you clearly see even the biggest schools struggling, right? So LA County was struggling with this. Not just that, I mean, you didn't just have access to the service most places in LA have access to service is what I'm trying to say. But the problem they were finding is this kind of secondary issue, right? This ability to use the technology in some sort of manner that helps everyone out. And we, in fact, see that when these technologies come in, when you see when internet comes in and you try to substitute out internet for any sort of like other educational methods, right? So if you if you do something to or use like, you know, the internet and video services in substitution for, you know, how people are being educated, hands-on learning is really, really difficult to do online writ large. Yeah. We know that it's not easy to do. We know that it's not easy to transition to online learning platforms.
Right.
There's good evidence that as soon as you do actually move towards an online learning platforms through instruction, you're effectively creating inequality, educational inequalities. And so to me, I mean, what we saw with COVID was a huge, huge problem, but it really brought to highlight this issue that I'm kind of dancing around, which is digital equity. And the reason I'm dancing around it is because I think that it's much more important to talk about the singular issue, right? We need to talk about students and their ability to have access, as compared to, say, somebody that is retired, that is not connected online. That, to me, those are two really different sorts of problems that we're dealing
with. And also someone who just wants to be able to stream Netflix without being interrupted by buffering and streaming problems, right?
Which is technically a difference between students and them, right? If they don't have that technically is included under digital equity issues, right?
Right.
Digital equity is large enough, at least as a topic discussion, to talk about just the ability to stream content, as you've mentioned. Sure. So,
well, and there's a difference between digital equity and digital inclusion, right?
Yes.
Can you expand on that? Is that something you're comfortable with me asking?
Digital equity is like the goal, right? Digital equity is this thing, this general topic that we're talking about. As I've mentioned, there are effectively two sorts of digital divides typically included within a digital equity problem. So you've got this first one, which is the technology or broadband availability gap. That's the kind of the first level digital divide. The second level digital divide is, of course, the ability to use these technologies. So those are the two different sorts of digital divides. The question is inclusion is all of those programs and efforts that are meant to include individuals and get them either connections is the first level digital divide, or the second one, giving them some sort of educational opportunity such that they know how to use these technologies fruitfully. Right. And all of those things are really, really, really difficult. I don't think anyone has a good grip on how to use technologies transformatively within education. It's been a constant problem. So to me, we're facing a whole bunch of different related problems, and I just don't know honestly that we can solve a lot of these. I think a lot of these problems are kind of what you would call wicked problems. They're fundamentally and they're durable, right? That they're just impossible really to budge in some regards.
It's just a matter of time is what it sounds like, not effort.
Now, not to say that certain areas like the area that Charles Scott was talking about in rural Arkansas, they clearly suffer from a problem related to access to the technology, this first level digital divide, right?
Yeah.
Solving that, I think, is truly like we have to be able to try to solve that problem, which we're doing in fits and starts, but it is.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. And I was really fascinated with one of his interviews of one of the teachers he's teaching with, and she had her house burned down. And so she went to go live in a camper. And while she was in the camper, her only access to the internet to teach her kids was a mobile LTE hotspot.
Yeah, right.
Isn't that, that's nuts. I mean, but it's not nuts in the fact that it's...
And that was the STEM education teacher, wasn't it? Wasn't
right,
the teacher that
right.
was doing like
She was
science?
Teaching math and yeah. science and STEM and had her whole Wi-Fi setup just shut down by fire, had yeah. to go on the mobile. And it's remarkable that she could do that, right? But it's also crazy that she had to move into a camper just to be able to live in general during COVID times. That's probably the scariest part to me. But
yeah,
the whole issue that I'm really trying to get at is having access to internet that works, that is
yes.
capable of supporting Zoom calls and capable of supporting streaming videos when you need to learn something mm-hmm. and capable of accessing Google Docs, for instance. That yeah. was one of the main issues that Charles Scott, Mr. Scott, was talking about, just how his kids can get on a Google Doc if they can't access the internet. And some of them actually had to walk to the public library just to get to one of those computers, which in COVID times is sort of problematic, right? You've got a lot of public buildings shut down. There's really no access to the computer at that point. And that was when we all realized that this broadband availability gap was extremely important.
Yes, yes, very much so, right?
But you've got this group of people, you're describing a group of people in your paper, and you call them the internet recalcitrants.
Yes.
And I really like the alliteration there, but I wanted to ask you about them in general.
Yeah. So these issues about digital equity, so there's obviously these kind of two levels that we're talking about, right? But then there's a group, so when we're trying to solve these sorts of problems, when we're talking about trying to solve the digital divide, The broader issue of digital equity is obviously contained within a bunch of different reasons, right? So the reason why you are not online is for a whole kind of host of different issues. And what I was just trying to figure out is, first off, when we're talking about digital equity, one is having some numbers on what this looks like, right? Who are a group of people, or what? How big is it, generally speaking, of the amount of people who don't have broadband availability?
Right.
By the statistics. And then next off, who are the groups that, or, you know, how big is the group that has a cost issue related to broadband? Because we also know that's another big problem, right?
Right.
I mean, this was what we saw within LA County, which I kind of also mentioned before, which is that with LA County, you had broadband access, but people didn't have the ability to pay for broadband. And so you had, in some of those cases, you just didn't have like the underlying technology, like the telephone, or, I'm sorry, not the telephone, but like a desktop or some sort of laptop to connect to the internet. And so even though they had the technology, even though there was not availability issue, there was still this kind of secondary availability issue because they couldn't pay for the service itself. And so those are two related sorts of problems when we're talking about these things. And they're still kind of ultimately related to your first level digital divide that I'm talking about, right? It's like you either have the ability to pay for the service or you don't. In part, that's related to, you know, a big portion of it, it seems, is related to cost. This availability problem is pretty small, though. All things considered, at least, the census suggests that about 4% of people aren't connected online because of the availability gap. A biggest chunk by far, or a bigger chunk, rather, I should say, a bigger chunk than that, about 20% of people aren't connected because of cost-related issues. And we've only just seen that actually government, and, you know, we haven't even talked about some of the legislation that's come through during the COVID times, but only recently have we seen any sort of action on this cost part of the problem.
And just to put that in context, 20% is something like 49.9 million people, right? That's not a small number. It's not just everyone in West Virginia, for example. It's or what people like to equate this thing to is just rural people not having access. This is 49.9 million people in the United States, which includes people in LA, includes people in Dallas, Texas, or
yes.
in New York.
And that's the entire group, though.
It's
when
endemic.
We're talking about this, that's the biggest groups of, right. Well, but also, I mean, I kind of tabulated a couple of these sorts of, a couple of these sorts of estimates, and that's actually that's itself is a bit of a wonky estimate.
Well,
right?
It is, right. That's just the census. Estimate.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and it's also a lot of the breakdowns are done by household. So all the information that we have is broken down generally by household. I need to rerun all of this using the, like what the personal, like what actually like an individual would look like, or the reasons why they're not connected online. Because most of my current data is done via households.
Well, now we'll that put a little asterisk there, and in the show notes, you can see that not a total hardline fact. No one take my word for it.
No. It's just the difference, right? No, it's just the difference between when you look at individuals, right? So you look at the individuals who aren't connected online, but then the data itself is broken down by households. And so then you ask household data and individual data, and they're slightly different actually. And so I need to do just a little bit more work to make sure it's all kind of working together.
Well, but before we get too far away from the point, I just wanted to come back to internet and house trends. Because
that's what I was getting to. That's what I was about to get to. So we've got this, you know, we've got the broadband availability gap, about 4% of all people who aren't connected online, right? So that's 4%. Another 20% or so aren't connected because they because of a cost issue. But a very, very large portion of people are not connected. 67%, 2/3 of all people are not connected because they just don't see that the internet is relevant in their lives. So that, to me, that's the internet recalcitrant, right? It's the group of people who do not want internet as a service. Now, this group tends to be, at least from my understanding, it tends to be a little bit older. Actually, there's not a lot of really, really good data on this, which is something I'm going to do in the next couple days to try to try to really dive into this. But we have this entire group of individuals, this group of households that aren't connected because they just don't see the relevance of the service. Nudging people on that is also really, really, really difficult. That's also not easy to solve that sort of problem on, you know, otherwise it's like you can't pay them and paying people doesn't really move this service either. Talking about the value of the service doesn't really change how they would want to consume. So this big group, this internet recalcitrant, this, you know, what is this? I think it's 15, almost 16 million households. So it's a pretty significant chunk of the entire subset of people who aren't connected are not connected because they don't see relevance. Yeah.
Right. That's a lot of people. But then to include those people and the estimates of people that aren't connected because we haven't done enough, that's sort of the issue that I'm getting at, right? Isn't there?
Yes. Yes.
There is some difference between people who want the internet and people who don't want the internet.
Exactly.
In the broad class of people who don't have it.
Exactly. But those two things are considered part of digital equity. And so, and those two things interact. And that's the other sort of interesting problem that, you know, the more that you have an area. So, for example, there are some areas in rural communities that tend to be a little bit older, right? Mm-hmm. So the older the community, you have less likelihood also being connected to the internet if you're in a rural community. So those two things considered, two things together suggest that in rural communities, because you have fewer people who are not connected because generally of relevance, right? They don't see it as being relevant in their own lives. That interacts with the people that do want to get it and who don't have the service because you can't maintain a company under like certain market conditions. Like it's a weird sort of problem. It's like that you create actually because you don't consume if you're a non-consumer of broadband, right? Uh-huh. So let's say you're a non-adopter, that your ability not to consume means that other people around you have a tougher time paying for the service because
It sounds a lot like insurance.
Yes, it is. It's a kind of an externality problem, right? It's a really interesting, those are generally externality problems. So yes,
I sort of wanted to ask you about the supply side versus the demand side, right? That's a big portion of your paper. One that I got tripped up on the first time because I didn't see supply side or demand side. And I just thought,
yes, I know. I'm trying to do a better job of this stuff too, is just trying to break it down and make it much more, less obtuse, right?
Well, because I'm sure to some people it's like reading fiction, right? It's the best thing that they've read, but those are economists typically. And to me, it's just like, I need some kind of header to keep me contained so that I don't drift off somewhere. But whenever I did figure out you were talking about supply side and demand side, then it became very interesting because I realized that there is a difference between consumers wanting the service and companies being able to provide the service and having a profitable business versus a business that just has a sunk cost every year, hoping that the government continues to fund them.
Yep. And those two things all kind of come together, right? I mean, this sort of, it goes two ways. So there is this supply issue, right? There are some areas that, and to put a very fine point on this, there has been a lot of emphasis traditionally on getting the supply correct, right? Trying to deal with the broadband availability gap. We've had a lot of money that's been spent at the states. We've had a good amount of money that's been spent by the FCC. You know, they have RDOF, the Rural Digital Opportunity Fund. There's been a lot of these opportunities. Yeah. So there's been a lot of money that's been spent on trying to solve this sort of problem of supply. We've almost never dealt with the issue of demand. So the these things are kind of wobbly, to be very, very honest, because I'm still putting in with a demand issue, like somebody's budget line technically. Right. So if you cannot afford to buy a service, I'm putting that part of a demand problem, even though it's kind of related to both of them, honestly.
Well, to me, it sounds like I'd like to put this in terms of selling toasters. Okay.
Yeah.
Now let's say that toasters are really fundamental to human life, mainly because you can toast your bread. You don't have to eat raw, soggy bread. That's just wonderful, right? And so I want to get toasters to every household. I have a toaster. It's the best thing about my life. Sometimes, like I throw my Eggos in there.
Yeah, a little bit of butter
on them, and it's perfect. But if you want to get toasters to everybody, some people aren't going to want a toaster first. Right. Some people like you, they don't really need a toaster. They don't really want a toaster. They don't have
to. I really don't need a toaster because I mean, I've got my oven.
So you're that group. But then there's the second group, the people who can't afford a toaster because toasters could be in this hypothetical price prohibitive. So you've got these people who don't want it, people who can't afford it. How do you get toasters to everyone? Because if you have a group of people all in the same place who don't want or can't afford toasters, and you have a toaster company that moves into town and is trying to be profitable, getting toasters to people, doing the good work of getting toasters to people, they can't make it without some kind of government subsidy. Yep. And then you interpret, or you just put that back on the internet, and it's the exact same problem.
It's the internet service itself. You can't
work this thing.
Yeah.
Right. You can't run business that way.
Exactly. Right. And this is exactly the sort of problem that we're facing with internet service. Now, thankfully we have had for the first time, and I've been quite supportive of it, of this effort, under a lot of the COVID relief that we've seen over the last couple months. But one of them was what was called the emergency broadband benefit. Now, I just saw recent data was just released because they just put that and made it live. So it was this program that basically gives families, it gives households a $50 credit per month if they have been suffering under, COVID, but also it has a whole bunch of other general requirements, or not requirements, but it's like if you fall under like a whole bunch of these other conditions, like, you have Pell Grants or you're part of the Lifeline program, a whole bunch of conditions. That I think is the way to actually do this, right? So for years, we've supported infrastructure deployment and infrastructure development. And I've much preferred us to move towards a system of vouchers that actually tries to deal with this cost problem, right? I mean, so this is the big sweep of the public policy concern that I'm trying to make is, one, is setting up just generally, like, what's the pattern and problem with the digital divide or with digital equity, right? What are the general contours of this problem of digital equity? So first, define what that is. And to me, it really does look like it's a pretty small part of it is related to infrastructure. A much bigger part is cost. And the biggest of the digital equity problem is really a relevancy issue. It's really difficult to deal with that relevancy problem, but we probably also need to talk about that, right? We need to figure out what that looks like. There needs to be more research on this. I mean, I feel like whenever I look up this stuff, whenever I look up this research, there's not very much like good information on this digital literacy problem. The last time we ran this survey, the last time that we got data from this survey was like 2013. And so
and that's way long ago.
It's insane to me. There's just no one's doing
like
work
the Razr in terms of phones, right? Like,
yeah,
the iPhone wasn't great. I had one of the first, or I guess one of the fours, maybe that was when I first got an iPhone 4, and I was thrilled with it, but it wasn't anything compared to what I have now.
Yes.
And I'm actually kind of thrilled that my grandparents have learned how to FaceTime. The day that I found out I passed the bar, my grandparents FaceTimed me. And this is the first time this had happened. And they were so excited to be able to FaceTime, and they FaceTimed me and they congratulated me. It was this whole moment because I hadn't seen them, and it was during the pandemic. But getting people to understand how to use technology is different depending on the person, right? It's not just age, because some people 65 and up can figure it out, like my grandparents have, I'm very proud of, and some people cannot, which is my grandma on the other side of my family, who I sat down and made instructions shot by shot just so that she could attend church services on Zoom, right? there are these two different groups, but it's not just isolated to 65 and up. It's just a whole group of people learning how to use technology in order to contribute to society when we're all on the internet instead of in person.
So then I guess then the question is what's public policy? Like where does public policy go from here? Right. I mean, I think that's probably the big, big question. There's a lot that's going on here is what I'm trying to say. So thankfully we have this emergency broadband benefit. And I didn't really suggest. So just to clarify and to put a very fine point on that, about a million people signed up in the first week, which I think that's going to be really, really good. And also it'll be interesting to get good data from this to do better in the future on these sorts of projects. I mean, I think that we probably should have something that looks, I mean, I know that not everyone wants to talk about an EITC, but I think this actually is probably one of the few places where you could do an EITC, like a tax credit.
Well, for the people that don't like acronyms like myself.
Earned income tax credit. So it's a tax credit that you get for your broadband service if you're of a certain income level, right? And it's a way to basically give people back money without necessarily, like, it doesn't solve all problems, but it would probably look something like a voucher system to allow people to be supported that were low income. And I think that is something we've needed to do for years.
And that is good because a tax credit comes after you've done all your taxes. You get to the amount you have to pay. Yes, it's not before like a deduction or anything.
Yes.
That's great.
Which but that also has its own sort of problems because it comes as a lump sum all at once. And a lot of people that should be probably getting it don't get it. Point being is that there's some way that we could probably structure this. And again, I'm still working through exactly what the benefits of, because again, like we've done something very similar to this before, right? We've done a lot of these sorts of programs in the past. We've done like EITC benefits. We've done lifeline programs. We've done all of these things in the past, but we need to figure out what the structure looks like. And really to get there, we've got to have much better data. I think honestly,
even just like what the impact is on people, right?
Right.
There's a big hole in how these programs have impacted people, if there's been any effect, if at all.
We need more experimentation when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The last time that the FCC did experimentation was, I think, 2012. I think that was the last time they did an experimentation on this. And they found it was really, really difficult to get people signed up to the internet. It's just a really difficult problem you're trying to crack. And I guess that, you know, so going forward, I mean, a lot of legislation is going to focus on the side of broadband availability, which, I mean, we need to solve that problem. But I think
it's still 4%, which is, again, not nothing. That's still like what?
12 million millions people? Of people. It is still millions of people. Right. That's nothing to, you know, that you're exactly right. We still do need to solve that. But I think we need to also be very conscientious of how far government programs can solve that sort of issue. The broadband availability gap being.
Well, with that, I think that's a fine bow to leave it on. Right. Part two is coming out of your 4-part series on broadband legislation and broadband access.
I know. And as you can tell, I get really ramped up about this stuff because I just, whenever I have these conversations, I feel like, I don't know, sometimes I feel like that this is something we need to get this done correctly. We need to do this right.
Right.
But I feel it not. Yeah.
Just like talking points, right?
Yeah. And just thinking through what a rational system for broadband benefits would be, right? Mm-hmm. Thinking through what the actual digital divide is, thinking through what equity would actually like to, what equity would look like. Right. And what are also the limits of our ability to have with these programs, because there, which as we will talk about in the future, there are limits to the things that we can do with subsidy programs, with various programs that various welfare programs or various credit programs or various vouchers. There's always limits to the things that you want to do with each one of these sorts of projects. And I just want to be very clear-eyed about that, because I feel whenever I talk about it, that people aren't being clear-eyed about one, the problem and then the solutions themselves. So.
And actions have consequences, right?
Yes, they do indeed. And you can actually.
That was your final point from my last rural broadband talk. So
which
if you
is
had
exactly
to sum it
the
up
case,
in
right?
Like one more sentence like that. What would you say the digital equity problem can be summed up into?
The digital equity problem really is, it is.
Give me another quote like last time. Come on, just give me one more quote.
This is very much right. I'm just trying to come up with this really, really quick. Right. So no, the problem of digital equity is the word that we got cut out of the final paper, which is it's polysemous, right? It is, it's, yeah, it's multiples in meaning, right? It polysemous.
It can be interpreted in multiple different ways. And exactly. I know that because I looked it up three times. Every time I read it, I was like, what does that mean? Dang it.
Yep. So there's multiple meanings for this same sort of problem. So digital equity has many sorts of meanings, and we need to parse what those meanings look like. And that will then give us a path forward in how to develop a program. So yes, digital equity is polysemous. Thanks, polysemous. Well, yeah.
Wrap it up.
With that, I think we're going to end. Caden, thanks for peppering me with questions. This is always tough, too.
Thanks for answering them.
No. I love this kind of stuff. But
my questions border on dumb and actually inquisitive.
No.
There's a balance going on. Like, there's the dumb question and then there's the inquisitive question.
Not at all. Not at all.
Sometimes I actually get a good point, you know?
This is a tough issue, my friend. No, this is, I think, a really big and tough, bold issue. Like, it just is a tough issue we're trying to deal with. And I just want us to be very clear-eyed. But with that, be well.
Be well.